Welcome to the River Mountain Church Preaching Library. It is our prayer and indeed our hope that this message might inspire your life. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the preaching of God's Word.
We're looking at the Sermon on the Mount, and we're looking at Matthew chapter 5. We're going to look at verses 33 and 37 today. And just in the way of recapping, what is going on here as Jesus is going through the Sermon on the Mount, remember he is speaking to his disciples, those who are going to be his followers. And what he is doing is he's contrasting his followers with the type of followers that the scribes and the Pharisees have. So as we go through this, remember that he's speaking to his disciples, and there's a contrast between the religious people and his disciples. There's also the idea that Jesus is kind of hiring the requirements for the law. But what we see is he's not trying to get legalistic. What he's trying to do is get people back to the true spirit of what God intended when he gave the law. And so he is exposing the Pharisees for trying to keep the letter of the law, but violating the spirit of the law. And many times what they'll do is that they'll concentrate on a minor law and violate a higher law. And we do this too. Sometimes we get a little legalistic and we'll get hyper-spiritual and hyper-focused about one particular offense. And in the process of doing that, we'll destroy a person. Anybody ever done that? I had a friend of mine by the name of Scott Ross, who now works for the 700 Club. He's one of their reporters and really godly man. And I had a chance to know him, and he wrote a book, and he gave me this book. And one of the stories he has in this book is really an interesting story. When he first got saved around Christmas time, his wife put up a beautiful tree, had all the Christmas decorations. He's newly saved, and he was reading some sort of literature that said that the Christian holiday was full of paganism, and one of the pagan symbols was the Christmas tree. Now, that's not true, but in this particular book it said there was pagan roots, you know, going back to the winter solstice and that kind of thing. And so when he got home, his wife was decorating the Christmas tree, the kids were helping, and he runs into his house. He says, "We won't have this pagan object in our house." He grabs the Christmas tree, rips it down, takes it out to the balcony, throws it over the balcony. The kids are crying, the wife's in hysterics, and here he is. He's going to be the champion of Christmas. He is going to take a stand for what is right. And by doing so, what did he do? He totally destroyed the peace of the house. He destroyed love. He ripped everything down because he thought he was obeying God. And this is a lot of what's going on with the Pharisees. They did not care about people, but they cared about the law. Kind of weird. And they were always doing things that were very offensive to keeping the spirit of the law. Remember, as I said last time, that they always were seekers of smooth things. They always wanted the law to kind of compromise. They were compromising the law to fit into their lifestyle. But it was all about them. And so they violated the spirit of the law. Remember Jesus was saying, yeah, they don't murder, but they desire to have wrath poured out on people. So if I have something in my heart, I might not murder you, but I'll figure out a way to trap you somehow so maybe somebody else murders you. But I won't do it, because that's against the law, but I'll figure out a way to get you murdered. That's what's in their heart. Yeah, I might not commit adultery because that's wrong, but I might figure out a way to get rid of my wife so I can go and get that other person that I wanted to commit adultery with, but I couldn't because that was against the law. So I get rid of my wife, and then they go, you see how they play the game? They were always looking for a loophole. No adultery, but I'll plan to get a divorce so I can get what I want. And so now we get down to another one of these issues in which Jesus is going to tell them not to swear by God. And they kind of knew that was wrong. But what they would do is they would use the oath, and we're going to look at this in just a second about giving oaths. They would use the oath in clever ways to trick people. For instance, I might say to Jay, I promise you I'm going to do that for you. And Jay looks at me kind of with a suspicious look. And I say, no. I swear by heaven, I will do that. And he goes, oh, he swears by heaven. All right, I guess he's going to do it. And I walk away and go, sucker. I didn't swear by God. I swear by heaven. That's not binding. He doesn't know that, but that's not a binding. See how I play the game? I got off the hook by promising him something, but I'm going to play the game. Remember Jesus, he heals on the Sabbath, and that was a big deal that they violated their law. But what was Jesus trying to say there by healing on the Sabbath? He was trying to say this, that if I don't heal this person who is suffering on the Sabbath, I'm going to violate a greater law. What is the greater law? Love. See, if I allow her to suffer and I can heal her, now I violate the law of love. So what Jesus always did, he always made sure that he kept the true spirit of the law, which was all about love. And if that meant violating a lesser law like the Sabbath, he would do that because he could keep a greater law like love. And it was all about keeping the spirit of the law and not concentrating on the letter. So what we're going to talk about today is speaking the truth in love. How many people know we should be truthful people? We should say what we mean what we say. We should not try to play a game. I remember hearing a story about a pastor. I don't know if this is right or wrong. I'll just throw this out here. But some lady would always cook a meal for him, but she was a horrible cook. But every Friday, what it was, she would come over with this meal. And so he said, now how do I do this and get away with this without insulting this lady? So he nicknamed his trash can Spot. And he would take the meal and he would throw it into the trash can. And so when she came in the following Sunday, he said, how'd you like the meal? He said, well, it really hit the spot. But the idea is, Now, maybe he was right. He was trying to keep a higher law of trying to love the lady and not worrying about the lesser law, which was sort of fudging the truth. So what we always have to keep in mind is that God wants us to be truthful, but we always have to make sure our truth is in love. So sometimes, if a lady says, does this dress make me look fat? Don't go there? Did I really go way outside the bounds of anything normal? Okay, I'm sorry. But what's interesting about the Pharisees, I'll throw this out about the Pharisees, that they actually had written in their little law book, one of their little interpretations, that if somebody comes and says something like, you know, does this, whatever, I don't know what it was in their day, do I look nice today? Like, do you think I look okay today? And the person looked like a wreck. You had to tell them that they looked like a wreck. You could not lie to them and say, no, you look fine. That just shows you how stupid the Pharisees are. I mean, they're just always on the wrong side of everything. So let's look at the text. Here it is, Matthew chapter 5, verse 33. Jesus says, again, you have heard that it has been said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but perform to the Lord what you have sworn. This was a big deal. If you would actually swear to do something with God as your witness, or you would swear to God that you would do it, you had to keep it. And it goes back to Deuteronomy where it says, if you make a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not delay in fulfilling it, for the Lord your God will require it of you, and you will be guilty of sin. So it goes on to say, but if you refrain from vowing, you will not be guilty of sin. So the idea was that any time you brought God into the equation, that you promised something, you swore by heaven, that you had to perform. And if you didn't perform it, not only were you guilty on earth, but now God's going to hold you accountable. So the Pharisees basically came up and said, well, in that case, it's better never to swear by God. It's never good to bring him into the picture because we're always making mistakes. But what they would do is they would lessen it by saying, okay, well, we won't swear by God, but maybe we'll swear by heaven. So here's what Jesus goes on to say. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. In other words, they would take an oath based upon something lesser, thinking that maybe they could get out of it. And now what Jesus is saying, do not make oaths at all, because let me tell you what, even though you're not swearing to God, you're swearing to something that belongs to God. The heavens belong to Him. The earth belongs to Him. Jerusalem belongs to Him. So even by bringing these things into the equation, in a sense, you are swearing by something that is owned by God. Therefore, you are swearing by God. So I say to you, don't even take any oath at all. Then he says this in 36. And do not take an oath by your own head. The closest thing we have to this is when somebody says, I swear on my life. I swear on my life. So you're not swearing by anything owned by God, you're swearing on your life. But look at what he says. For you cannot make one hair white or black. What is he trying to say? Who makes your hair gray? Is it you? Is this the kids? That might be so. Well, indirectly God has given you those kids. So ultimately, what happens is, it is God who decides what happens to your hair, whether it turns gray or whether you lose it or whatever. Excuse me, no offense amended here. I'm not trying to do that. God decided for you to have that kind of thing. No offense to anybody with that kind of thing. But the idea is, don't swear by your head, by your own, because you don't belong to you. So don't even play that game. So now here's the question: what is Jesus saying? Is he telling us as Christians never to take an oath, never to swear? Because if that be the case, where do we have to sometimes take an oath? Huh? In court. And in court, they really lay it on thick, don't they? Do you swear to tell the truth? The whole truth! And nothing but the truth! So help you, God! And where do you have to put your hand? On a Bible. So what they're hoping is this. You might be a compulsive liar. You might fudge the truth. But based upon being on oath, do you swear to tell the truth? The whole truth? And nothing but the truth? So help you God. Well, you have your hand on the Bible. And somebody, sure enough, a liar would go, oh, well, in that case, right, now you got me now. But you know, the court does do this, right? Because even the police, you know that what you said under oath? Under oath you said that. Now they have a lot of leeway, right? Because they can, to say something under oath is a bigger deal than just to say something, right? So here's how the game is played. So should we as Christians play by that system? Well, there's a couple of groups that would say no. In the first century, the Essenes, because oaths were big back then, here's what they said. Swearing is to be avoided by them, for they esteemed it to be worse than being perjured. For they said that he who cannot be believed without swearing is already condemned. If you cannot be believed without swearing, then you're already a bad person. See, if I got to make you take an oath to tell the truth, you're a bad guy. Because you should just tell the truth. So if you're going to tell me to swear, then that's an insult to my integrity. That's the way they believed. There are other modern groups that believe that, the Quakers. They wouldn't take oaths. In our courts, kind of created a little stir. Jehovah's Witnesses, they will not take an oath. Now here's my question to my biblically literate congregation. If you get called to court, are you doing something wrong by putting your hand on the Bible and making that long declaration? You should know the answer to this, but I won't put you on the spot. The answer to that question is, it's not a problem. And the reason why it's not a problem is because we actually see various people do it in the Bible. For instance, Jesus was called by oath. At his trial, Jesus remained silent, and then the high priest said to him, I adjure you, by the living God, tell us. See, I'm basically saying this before God. I'm asking you before God, are you the Christ? And Jesus answered the question truthfully. The Apostle Paul, here's what he said. He says, and what I'm writing to you before God, and I do not lie. So here he kind of swears by God. God, I'm not lying. We also see it in the book of Hebrews. God actually does this. So when God desired to show more convincingly to the heirs of promise the unchangeable character of His purpose, He guaranteed it with an oath. So if God makes an oath, Jesus obeyed an oath, and Paul actually brought in an oath, it's not wrong for us to abide by an oath. The problem is when we do it like the Pharisees did it, when we use it in a manipulative way. Or we try to get around it. Or when we just frivolously throw it out there as a convenient mechanism to get us off the hook. Are you telling me the truth? I swear on my mother's grave. That's not good enough. Are you telling me the truth? I swear as God is my witness and all the angels. All right, well, okay, that might... All right, I guess you're telling me the truth then. That's not the way this thing works. So here's what Jesus says. Let what you say simply be yes or no. Anything more comes from the evil one. Now let me give you a little practical example of this. This happened on the way over here to church. Jay got this text too from my wife. My wife is away, another birthday. We have a lot of grandchildren. We have a lot of birthdays. I can miss them. She can't. Well, actually, she told me she would never miss them. She said it in such a way where I know she was serious that she will never miss these. But that's neither here nor there. This is not about that. Anyway, so she sends me out a text. She says, please pray for Arlene. Her mother is taken to the hospital, I'm not sure what. I was just about ready to text her back and say, will do. Or absolutely. There's a problem with that, isn't there? And here's the problem. How do I know I'll remember? So I'm going to tell them, we will do this. Absolutely going to do this. But see, I'm making a promise I might not be able to keep, being the absent-minded person that I am. And a lot of times we do this. We make promises that we really shouldn't make. And I think that's what Jesus is saying. You're a very fallible person, so be careful to make commitments. I looked at Jay's response to that email, which was a text, which was right. What did you say? Okay! Which is vague and abstract, and who knows? It could happen, it might not happen. It's okay. I'm not making you any promises. Okay. Okay, I heard you. Okay, I'm going to do it. It doesn't matter. It's vague enough where he's covered no matter what. He's no dummy. And so when I saw Jay's reply to that text, I erased my will do, and I said, wait a second. Okay sounds good to me. Okay. But that's kind of what Jesus is saying here. Don't go into all this big elaborate, you know, we'll do it, oh, definitely, absolutely, positively, blah, 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 blah. Just say yes. Say no. Anything more comes from the evil one, because anything more is sort of presuming that it will definitely happen, no problem. But we don't know that. And again, it gets back to this idea. There's arrogance involved in saying it will absolutely happen because I could be dead in 5 minutes. Okay? And there's also a problem for me to say, with God as my witness and all the angels. Who am I to summon all the angels to come and witness this? Don't they got better things to do than watch me make a fool of myself? All of this is just arrogance. Just let your word be your word. What did the old timers used to say? My word is my bond. I'm a man of my word. If I give you my word, that's it. Well, I mean, you know. I mean, they're, what they're basically saying is, if I say yes, it's yes. If I say no, it's no. But I'm not going to make you big, long promises or anything like that. You see, let me give you a couple problems, and we're closing here with a couple verses here on the problems with giving oaths, and something maybe for you to contemplate. This is the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon, of course, the wisest man, he says, when you vow a vow to God, do not delay in paying it, for He takes no pleasure in fools. you pledge something to God, you're in a really difficult place now. It says, pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than you should vow and not pay. Let not your mouth lead you into sin. And do not say before the messenger that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry at your voice and destroy the works of your hand? In other words, men be better off just to leave God out of the whole thing. Don't be bringing God into this. Because then you're in a whole different level of what? Accountability. Here's another problem with making a vow. You could make a vow that you will later regret. And we have this in the case of Herod. Remember Herod? Herod actually liked John the Baptist. But at this feast that he gets drunk and his stepdaughter is doing this dance, and he vows this crazy oath that he'll give her anything she wants. And so it says here, with an oath to give her whatever she might ask, then this girl was prompted by her mother saying, give me the head of John the Baptist. And then the king was sorry because of his oath, and his guest he commanded to be given because he was embarrassed. He's the king, he makes an oath, and now she says the head of John the Baptist, and now he's back in the corner, he's got to do it. So when you sign something and when you agree to something, be careful, because it may not be what you really want. And finally, we know that Peter made the huge mistake when he was at the courtyard, and they're asking him, do you know him? And he did not. Here's what Matthew 14:7 says. He denied it with an oath. I don't know the man. And then finally again, it says, then he began to invoke a curse on himself to swear. He more or less said, may I be cursed if I'm not telling you the truth. Whoa, wow, Peter, what are you doing? I don't know the man. So, the Pharisees were full of duplicity. They played a game with oaths. They used it in kind of a manipulative way to assure people of something, but yet they had no intention of keeping their promises. They were arrogant. And Jesus says of his disciples, it's not going to be that way. Here's one of the first century fathers, and I'm closing with this. Actually, it was the second century. Excuse me, it says the second century right in there. I have first, second century. The theologian Clement of Alexandria insisted that Christians must lead such a life and to demonstrate such a character that no one will ever dream of asking an oath from them. I never have to put you on oath. I never have to do that because I know your character. I know when you say it's true, it's true. This is the inward heart of the disciple, that my life is about truth and transparency. And I will say this, that all of us have things in our life that we're probably ashamed of, and things that we've confessed to God and maybe made right with other people. And those things are embarrassing to us, sinful to us. And once they are asked for, once we ask for forgiveness for those things, we are forgiven. But having said that, we are called to live a life of transparency before God. So I want to pray now to the Heavenly Father. Jesus was always trying to get his disciples to be purified from the inside out, to make sure that they did not have lies and deceit and slander in their hearts, that they try to live truthful lives before men and before God. And so that required God creating in them a clean heart. So as this song plays, I want you to make it a prayer to your Heavenly Father that He will remove from you all deceit, that He will remove from you all cunning, that He'll remove from you all words that lend themselves toward being misleading or deceitful. That we will keep our hearts clear and transparent, so we will remain in spiritual freedom.
Thanks for listening to this message from River Mountain Church. Our church is located in Shepton, Pennsylvania. If you'd like some more information, visit our website, rivermountainchurch.org.